Already cancelled. Already cancelled. Already cancelled.
Yes, welcome to Already Cancelled. Key and Yaz of Nisha. Hit that like, share, subscribe button right now. Jump on the show on YouTube or across your favorite podcast platform, guys. Mm-hmm. We are everywhere now. Yeah. Instagram as well. Make sure you check it out, Key and Yaz of Nisha. I am so excited because on today's episode, we touch base with something that we brought up, I think maybe 10 episodes ago.
A while ago,
which was so like mind-boggling and so stressful to some people that people were almost vomiting listening to it.
So how it all happened was I was doom scrolling
through Instagram, and I came across this video that had millions of views of a guy that was drinking urine. He drank urine on the video, but he was explaining the health benefits of it. And I was like, nah, this can't be right. This can't be real. We brought it to all of our listeners, guys, and we said, who else does this?
Yeah.
Has anyone else done something like this with urine? What do they do with it? And surprise, surprise, a couple of people actually did.
Yeah, they did.
And weirdly enough as well, I've noticed throughout life, 31 years of life, I've heard this urine stuff come up occasionally, but regularly.
Yeah.
Like, am I wrong?
No.
As a kid, you didn't hear urine was good for you or like...
No, I didn't hear it was good for you. Oh, well, actually, that's a lie. No, I did. I heard that if you were ever stuck in like a situation where you needed water, but you didn't have water,
you drink urine.
You drink.
That's the last resort, I think.
Yeah. Or like the whole jellyfish thing, you know, you get stung. But I think that was debunked as well.
That's bullshit.
But the whole point that I'm bringing this back up again is because I tracked down the man himself that drank the urine on that podcast. But there's something surprising about this guy. He's an investigative journalist, a natural health researcher, a documentary filmmaker and humanitarian.
Wow.
He's done over 20 highly acclaimed and groundbreaking docuseries, guys. And I'm going to run through the list soon. And wow, he's just got a wealth of life. And he's also the founder of Wealth of Life, a premium line of natural supplements that detoxes and fortifies for the body and helps people achieve ultimate healing. Mm. Guys, please welcome to the podcast, to the show, Jonathan Otte. What's up,
welcome,
man?
Welcome, Jonathan.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you guys. I feel like I'm at home.
Yeah, well, I'm just noticing the Aussie accent here. So we didn't even know that you're Australian.
Yeah, wow.
No, proud Australian and just loving actually hearing that accent myself because I live in, well, an American territory in Puerto Rico, and I've been here for like the last 12 years. So it's really nice to hear that accent.
Oh, 12 years.
12 years is a very long time.
Let's start off by asking, why are you in Puerto Rico? Like, why did you make the move there?
Well, I was in California. I married an American, and then set up in California and San Diego. And then we found that Puerto Rico had such a great opportunity to start a family. We've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. There are tax incentives for people that have businesses. My business started really taking off and became really successful. So it also made sense to be smart financially, but I live directly on the beach here and I just love, being outside and taking my kids out on the beach. And so that's kind of really the reason.
Oh, that sounds like the life.
It does, right?
Yeah,
it sounds like the life. All the way until we get to drinking and playing
urine.
Around with urine. I mean, this is strange, but we'll get into it.
We get to the urine, because obviously you were born in Australia, I'm assuming. Is that correct, Jonathan?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. And my mum's Malaysian. My dad's German descent. So that's kind of the ethnicity there.
Oh, beautiful. So you grew up here, you know, you were just living your life. How did you get into, I guess, like, because you've done so many documentaries, you're an investigative journalist, like you're doing some wild, incredible things, groundbreaking things too, I would say. How did this even come to be? Like, what made you, you know, one day be like, hey, you know what? I want to tell people the truth.
Well, yeah. So when I was about 7 years old, there was this commercial. It was World Vision, a humanitarian aid organization. They showed these images of children that were emaciated from famine. And it really had this visceral reaction for me. So I was crying. I talked to my mom. I said, we have to do something. How do we help? We need to sponsor a child. And so, because that's what the voice said. It said, you can help a child if you sponsor a child. So I took that to heart. And then my mom was smart enough to actually give me that responsibility. And she said, well, you need to learn how to make money to do that. And so at that age, I started delivering newspapers so that I could sponsor a child.
Oh my God,
so then fast forward to 17 years old, I became an ambassador for World Vision, which was a volunteer position. But then I got a paid position with them for the next 4 years being a youth representative. But some of that entailed going out to Tanzania and other places in Africa. And then I did my own trips through Asia. My whole reason then to get a degree in communications with a major in journalism and media production was so that I could cover world issues, to spotlight issues like famines, to help people so that people wouldn't die and that people wouldn't suffer, and I could do my part to end suffering. Meanwhile, my health was suffering the whole time. That meant that as I went into full-time career, I had to quit because I was suffering from all these different health conditions, including Lyme disease and Epstein-Barr, and cytomegalovirus and Ross River fever, glandular fever, chronic boils in my body, dehydration. And so I was like, if I didn't work out what to do with my health, knowing that no conventional doctor could help me, and I tried that, then I started to realize there's something here. And once I found that stuff out, then I started feeling like I had to tell people about the truth. And that's what began that whole pathway.
Wow, that's amazing.
That is insane.
That's what an impressive story. I mean, so did these health issues, did you pick that up because you were traveling to different places, or is that something that was hereditary? How did they all come about?
Or the health issues. Yeah. So yeah, some of it could have been, look, I mean, you're talking about censored topics. I got all my childhood vaccines, and I then had to get additional vaccines when I traveled to other countries. And then I had to get additional vaccines when I became a permanent resident of America. So I actually got a lot of vaccines, and I do believe it damaged my health significantly. Mm. And to put that in context, the US vaccine court has paid out $4.3 billion to vaccine injured families.
Wow.
It's not just me that's claiming this. I mean, there's lawsuits that are won. And companies like Pfizer had the largest criminal settlements in history. They paid $3.2 billion through one suit, and that was for drugs. But you get the concept of pharmaceuticals that are damaging people and, you know, taking a perfectly healthy child and making them sick. I don't know for a fact that that was necessarily what caused my poor health as a child, but it was one of the many things. Glyphosate, which is the active ingredient, it's the Roundup Ready corn pesticide that is widespread. Monsanto, you guys familiar?
Yep.
But there's
yep.
$11 billion in won lawsuits against Monsanto and 100,000 won lawsuits. And these are all these horrific cases of people dying of cancer. I think it's a wonder. It makes sense why 50% of people today are getting cancer. Mm. So yeah, people don't realize how high the statistics are. They're horrific. And we are being poisoned by all kinds of things in our food supplies. And the only way to me that this humanity can move forward is if we get really serious about what's actually happening to us and learn solutions. Enter urine therapy and why. And, you know, that's a fascinating thing there. But my point being, it's actually solutions, not just the one interest for controversy, or because some of the stuff that went viral was the cosmetic stuff of putting it on your skin. I do that, but my bigger interest is helping people reverse disease rather than looking beautiful. But if people want to look beautiful, then sure, I do believe that putting urine on your face is one of the best things you could do to keep a youthful appearance. 100%, I've seen it.
Okay, hold on for a second. So I just want to explain that you listed a lot of different things there. We can touch on those stuff as we get to it. But what you just mentioned about putting urine in your face. Now, guys, you can see Jonathan Otto, right? Mm-hmm. He's a great looking guy. His skin is unbelievable.
It is.
Right?
And when you first came on the screen, Jonathan, I wanted to ask your age. Now, I don't know if that's rude or not, but you look younger than me. How old are you?
38.
Okay. So, oh my God.
He does look younger.
Yeah, he could pull off 28. I reckon he could pull off 28.
Mid-20s for sure. I don't know if that's the Malaysian descent, the Asian genes. I don't know if that, or it's the urine on the face, but it's something. You're doing something right. That's for sure.
Okay, so you did list a lot of controversial stuff there. What do you say to the people that are very mainstream, they're very left, or they understand, they follow the science, inverted commas? How do you deal with those people coming at you, whether it's via social media or emails or whatever it is, because you know your stuff, but they also are backed by science for years and years and years. How do you interact with that conversation?
Yeah, it's tough. Like, I'm not the guy that actually likes to get in fights, pick fights, you know, make people feel uncomfortable. I just have found myself in a position where if I don't do this, then I am now putting everyone in a worse situation, including those that attack me. And so when I speak to them, for me, I know in my heart, I'm standing for them. I believe the reason why they come at me the way that they do is simply because they're propagandized to do so. And they're not very familiar with what they're actually talking about. And, you know, some of the science that backs that, the so-called science that caused people to do things that were the most severe, experimental, and, you know, life-threatening types of therapies that were interventions that people didn't have to take, that they took them because other effective treatments were taken away from them. My colleagues, some of which, like there's one, Dr. Ben Marble, he had 300,000 people treated for COVID, 12 fatalities, it's 99.99%. They were advocating against the vaccines. They would not be in need if people had the correct treatments. And then as to what COVID actually is, that's another exploration that needs to be done there. But then people went and got these treatments. Then that now a major study comes out, 99 million people in this study, vaccinated individuals, showing that they had a major increase in all different types of diseases. Like their risk of an inflamed heart, which is a often fatal diagnosis, was 6.91 times greater than those that were unvaccinated. And that was just one category. And they included like spinal swelling and brain swelling and injury and all these different cases. They range from 1.5 to, in this case, 6.91 times the risk factor. And the headline still reads slight increase in disease complications for COVID-19 vaccinations. And then colon, but the risk is still very small, but very slight, but very small. These were the things that were almost shameful headlines that were incorrect. But so they bury the information, and then you then start repeating, yeah, but it was a really slight risk, that because you haven't actually read the study. That's what I think the problem is.
But you said correct treatment. Sorry, just to understand what you're trying to say, are you saying that basically people out there are getting treatment that isn't right, and the correct treatment that people should be getting is basically being hidden or not accessible to the public?
Exactly. Yeah, wow. And then like my colleagues, we'd release something. It was an important message. Like, you know, Dr. Richard Bartlett, one of my colleagues, then releases that inhaled budesonide is going to reduce hospitalization. And then Matthew McConaughey gets asked somehow by Fauci, and Fauci gets on to do a hit piece after this gets 6 million views. Then they do a hit piece against inhaled budesonide, saying that don't do this. There's no science that backs it. Then Oxford University produced a study that showed that if you inhale budesonide, which is like a steroid, that it would reduce hospitalization by 90%.
Wow. Wow.
And then no retraction by Fauci, no retraction by McConaughey. And these are the types of things that were happening continually. All these kinds of treatments were being demonized, even though they were completely effective.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole thing with Joe Rogan, I recall that happened with, what was it, the horse?
Ivermectin.
And people were saying it's for horses or whatever. And he was like, yeah, but it was effective for me. And there was not just him that recounted that. Like, there was a lot of people who said that it... And look, I'm not saying anything, but I'm just saying this is what people had said. And he was demonized. Like, people just...
Well, here's the thing, right? And Jonathan, you might be better to answer this. You know that you've done your research, you've interviewed and spoken with a lot of your colleagues, which are doctors, and you know the studies, you understand the information. Why are they holding? Why in what you're saying are they holding back all this from society, from humanity?
Is it money?
Yeah, this one is going to be the weirdest part of what I say, because I don't know all the motivations, because now you're asking a motivation question. Everything else is like then science. I can give a shot at the motivation. I think the motivation is some type of depopulation. Wow. I think that there are too many people to regulate things so that the surveillance is too hard to do on this number of people. If you look at control, if you look at societies and how control has been something that has always had to be held in check, and that people that get into power, there is some evil kind of bend that people take. You see it all around the world where this grasping after control, a smaller population presents that. But I don't know that for a fact, but like, just give you an example. pregnant women were excluded from clinical trials for all the vaccines, all the COVID vaccines. Yet if you were pregnant, you would be forced to get a vaccine. Otherwise, you'd lose your job. That's like basically a war crime to do things like this. This is very, very strange. Like you can't, if you try to get Botox and you're a pregnant woman, you can't even get it because they'll tell you, no, well, you've told us that you're pregnant. You can't get this now It hasn't been tested on pregnant women. And yet the vaccine wasn't tested on pregnant women, but now you didn't even have a choice. You either lost your career, And then this is the reason why so many miscarriages were happening, because they also showed studies like an 82% chance of miscarriage. And Dr. James Thorpe, who's treated tens of thousands of patients, he's even presented that it was more effective to take an abortion pill than it was to the vaccine was actually more effective than the abortion pill to take.
Wow.
That in terms of the raw numbers.
That's intense.
But that's interesting. But a lot of people are coming out and saying that, like, we are actually having a population issue in saying that we need more people.
Yeah, like you hear Elon Musk say, have more kids.
Because we're actually getting to a point where we won't be able to.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like maintain grow. The human race. Yeah.
But I think what Jonathan is saying is it's not depopulating. It's depopulating for the reason of control. It's hard to control when there's more people on Earth.
But the argument is that there won't be anyone to control if we keep going backwards, if that makes sense. Because if we keep depopulating, which we're already in a crisis of, and look, this is, I'm basing this off like reputable people that I've been listening to, but once again, I don't know the facts I'll be honest about it. But you know, that we're having a population crisis. So, you know, fast forward how many years, there won't be enough people to control because, you know, we're going in that direction.
Well, there are 8 billion people on the planet right now. I think it will take a long time for the population to go down to 500 million, and which is one of the conspiracies are stating.
No, like have a look at like excess mortality. This is coming out of Senate hearings. I've been in these Senate hearings in the government buildings, and like you've got one that Senator Ron Johnson just presented where it was the insurance company was One American. They showed an excess mortality, I'll explain what that is, which is basically the amount of people dying extra per year, percentage-wise, of 40% excess mortality in the millennial age group. And so these are examples where there's data coming out of many countries. This is kind of like, generally speaking, you're talking in excess of 20% across throughout the world at the moment. And that's a general number, but to give you a context there in terms of looking at world events, World War II had a 10% excess mortality. So just to put things in perspective, this is the worst thing I think that anyone has ever seen in history in terms of sheer numbers. And to give another piece of information, you've got the fact that in the government database, we've got just short of 40,000 deaths have been reported in connection to the vaccine. And this is United States data. And to like have a look at 1976 when the swine flu vaccine came out, there was actually only 50 deaths reported, and there were 500 cases of Guillain-Barré, which is paralysis. Then in that case, the swine flu vaccine was taken off the market, that deemed us unsafe. And now this vaccine has had the death toll of, in that case, just short of 40,000 in the government official federal reporting system. And Harvard was commissioned by the Human Health Services to find out how many people are reporting their data, and it was less than 1%. So now you have to take all the data and times it by 100 until that study is proven wrong, because doctors don't even know about it. You guys haven't probably, don't know that system exists. So if you got an injury, you wouldn't report it because you didn't know. Most people that take the vaccine, they're not anti-vaxxers. So they're actually not reporting. They're not wanting, they don't know about these systems until they just really feel like they need to somehow get the word out or just somehow report it for the sake of the manufacturers so that they can know more about the efficacy of their products. That tells you that close to potentially 4 million Americans may have died from that. It's about 50% US data. So you're talking about potentially 2 million Americans. But then the injuries were over 1.5 million people injured. Times that by 100, you've got 150 million people that were injured. Just US data. Yellow card is the European system.
Yeah.
TGA is the Australian system.
So I think it's pretty safe to say that you believe that behind these pharmaceutical companies releasing these vaccines and all of this stuff, would you happily agree to me saying that there's malicious intent and foul play and they know what they're doing?
Yeah, correct.
What do you say?
Right.
What
it's impossible to explain those things any other way to me. I could explain a few of the things as though it was maybe rushed and they were trying, but they fell short of the mark. But a lot of the things I just mentioned are things that are checks and balances that were blown through that show a disregard for human life and a regard either for profit or other intents.
What do you say to the narrative that, well, if we didn't take it, more people would have died?
Yeah, sure. So that is one, not true, considering that if we just got the correct treatments, which were being demonized, I'll report again on someone like Dr. Ben Marble with myfreedoctor.com, where they treated 300,000 people for free. There was like, there's, I don't know, maybe 10, 20, 30 physicians that were fielding all that. He treated 20,000 people himself. He only had one fatality out of the 20,000, all treated for COVID. He was the whole time advocating against the vaccine, calling Anthony Fauci, Dr. Death, and telling people not to take it. That was what that platform was standing for.
Yeah.
So one, we would have a lot more people alive today with just correct treatments being prescribed. Remdesivir, like the best way to remember that drug is run, death is near, because it caused organ failure across the board. And people like Fauci knew this because it had failed all the clinical studies leading up into that point. And what happened was then when you were put on that, it caused organ failure, and then they were incentivized to put you like on intubation. And nobody was being told to take these drugs, these repurposed drugs that were effective. And ivermectin is not a horse drug. It's a human drug that also has a horse version, but the human version is the one that's been used like 4 billion times won a Nobel Prize. Now it gets demonized. It makes no sense at all. So yeah, there would be no need for the vaccine for starters. Then in terms of the vaccine, well, the vaccine doesn't actually show any data, one, that it stopped transmissibility, and it doesn't show any data that it shows that it stopped the severity if you got COVID, which was then became the other narrative. First, it was that it would stop you from being able to transmit. Second, it was that it would give you less severe symptoms. But then data that came out of places like Walgreens, which is the pharmacy in America, would show the opposite, where if you took the vaccine, you had a much greater risk of greater severity with COVID. And then the VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System database, then that showed that one of the strongest reactions that people got to taking the COVID vaccine was, guess what? COVID. So people were getting COVID from taking the COVID vaccines. Oh. But this stuff is all super surface. If you want the real stuff, the real stuff is the fact that the studies that came out of Italy, China, and France all showed that the people that were COVID positive had all kinds of animal venoms in them. And that's the thing that people need to know about. And if you saw the data, you look up studies from like people like Carlo Brogna. This is on PubMed. I'm not talking about conspiracywebsite.com. I'm talking, which doesn't exist, but
Googling that.
Yeah, people are looking it up. I'm like, well, I don't know what's there. Don't go there. I'm talking about the government databases, peer review studies that showed that look at Carlo Brogna's study. The title was Toxin-like peptides found in blood, urine, and feces of COVID-19 patients. Then it says results. Toxin-like peptides almost identical to toxic components of venoms from animals found in blood, urine, and feces of COVID-19 patients. Then it lists all the different cone snail venoms, and then it lists the specific species. Like they were the Californian cone snail, the yellow cone conotoxin, and then the Chinese crate snake, the Malayan crate, the Uruguayan coral snake, and the specific amino acid chain length. There were all these different, there was a crown of thorn starfish. And if you were COVID negative, you wouldn't have a single one of these animal venoms. And then if you were COVID positive, you'd have one or more of all 36. And this was just in a study of 20 COVID positive, 10 COVID negative. And then the fact that geneticists from... Yeah, think about that for
sorry,
a second.
Sorry,
You're blowing our mind.
I need to take a second to understand, because this is like I'm freaking out a little. So with these venom, like different venom from different reptiles or animals discovered, is that from getting the virus?
Yeah. It was June of 2020 before the vaccines exist. I quoted from a study before the vaccines came out.
Based upon that is the thinking that it was genetically manufactured and then spread in order to then implement whatever this vaccine was. Is that
exactly. Just like HIV was the same story. And if you just look up what is the origin of the sequence of the HIV AIDS virus? And they'll tell you specifically in mainstream science that it's identical in its homology sequence, which means the origin of its composition is identical to a Bungoro toxin, which is a cobra venom. And so, it, which is, you know, HIV GP120, identical to cobra toxin or Bungoro toxin, which is cobra venom. So this shows you that HIV, you know, instead of the propaganda of the fact that somebody either had sex with a monkey or somebody ate monkey brains, and then it somehow it's just spread around the world, and then somehow it's going on in Africa and it's going on in New York and everyone's getting infected, and it's just, it doesn't make any sense. And same thing with Wuhan and Northern Italy, where these outbreaks were allegedly spreading from these places, but yet, you know, people were all locked down with masks on their face, driving their cars with masks, sitting in their house and getting infected. And then you'd say, well, how did they get infected? And then if you look in, like, I found these documents when I went on to the government websites where we looked at 1975. I asked one of my colleagues, did they put venoms in these shots or something like this? Because I don't know of anything that can create heart attacks like this. Okay, so 1975, CIA disclosed the fact that they've developed a heart attack gun. Notice the athletes that are getting these heart attacks somehow. Perfectly healthy athletes all of a sudden have a heart attack. And it just made me wonder, how did it have all these neurological symptoms and then all these people having all kinds of reactions and the heart attacks? And I thought, could it be the venom? Because I researched this heart attack gun. This was the basis of this film that I released called Covenom. Then I went through the data and found the congressional hearing where they presented the heart attack gun, and it was using a shellfish venom, and that's how they created the heart attack. And then if you realize that, like, the pharmaceutical industry, one of the biggest components of what is backing this and like the active ingredients is actually venom. Look up all the studies, all the science behind animal venom. It's like basically whenever you see certain words like Prialt, that's primary alternative pain medication, they're all like derivatives of various venoms. And so it's not unusual. And people that like know a lot about this, they'll look at, they'll say, well, Jonathan, like they're used in medications, but one, people should be aware of that. And then, but then you look at the opportunity for terrorism. They developed the heart attack gun, disclosed it in 1975, show that they could just, shoot you with this. But then I go through their documents on senate.gov. I just download their documents and read through the pages and present it in my documentary, showed that they actually put animal venoms in water supplies back then. And they did it between buildings without people knowing. The CIA were like, let's do it to the FBI building. And like, let's dump it in the water fountains and see like whether we can carry out covert operations. That was the premise of it. And then they said as well, it was modulated off chlorine levels, which is interesting that all the kinds of chlorine derivatives were also getting demonized because they could have these abilities to denature these toxins. Because in this case, if there's too much chlorine in the water, they wouldn't be able to, the venoms would die. Anyway, then you go in the future, 2012, the Department of Justice put out this warning that conotoxins, which is cone snail venom, can be mass dropped on populations because they can be synthetically processed and they could actually be aerosolized or put into food supplies and there'd be mass outbreaks. And then you've got this other strange thing of Monsanto, the glyphosate. Monsanto are the world-leading patent holders in animal venoms as pesticides. And then you wonder now why all these people are getting all these brain tumors and all the kinds of cancers and tumors all over their body and why they're winning. Like there was a $100 million lawsuit won by Dwayne Johnson, a groundskeeper that died because he was spraying the Roundup. But it's an animal venom derivative because of the patent database. You can realize what it is. Then fast forward to the World Economic Forum. Bad, bad group of people. You don't want them in your home. You wouldn't trust them with your children. They're not good people. And they in 2017 released these articles on how killer snails can transform the world. But in what way? Like what, to make it a better place by reducing the population? Mm-hmm. Bill Gates himself said that he could reduce the population by immunizations and child reproductive services by about 15% in a TED talk. And then just people don't even think about what he's actually saying. Anyway, and then come 2020, then people are getting mass poisoned and we don't know where it's coming from. We're told all these stories about bats, but there's no commonality with bats. And then researchers, the geneticists out of multiple countries then showing, no, everyone's testing positive. They've got animal venoms in them. And this is the reason why nicotine was working. Anyway, that's another story. But nicotine patches would stop respiratory arrest immediately because all venoms bind to something called alpha-7 nicotinic acetylcholine receptors. They're in your brain and heart. If people are getting respiratory arrest from something like COVID, put a nicotine patch on and immediately you'll come out of it. I've seen it happen a bunch of times. It's a very effective treatment.
You're blowing my mind. I've got so many questions, but you're jotting off so much things that I'm like losing my thought here, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's safe to say, Jonathan, you've scared the shit out of me today. Yeah. Like I can feel things going wrong in my body for all the mistakes that I've made in my life taking vaccines and certain medications and all this crap. Is it reversible? Let's say I've taken vaccines my entire life. Is it reversible?
I've seen the most horrific cases of vaccine injuries where they've basically had to put their children into like signing wills and getting people set up because they were having like, they were bleeding profusely, like women that had bled for 16 days a month, induced periods, heart palpitations every day since the vaccine, severe migraines, they're so painful. I've seen these people reverse their symptoms and injuries to the fact that they're healthier than what they were before they took the vaccine.
Thank God.
One of which therapies has been the urine therapy, which is a hard sell for some people.
The first thing I need to get across the line though, first of all, for the people that are listening that are skeptical of what you're saying, that are think of you as a loony, a conspiracy theorist and would want to label you, facts. Where are the facts? Where can someone go to see the facts that you're talking about? Is it in the docuseries? Are there certain websites? How would you go about explaining that certifies this information that you have discussed and disclosed as legitimate?
Sure. Like it, you know, it depends what you're looking for. If it's the dangers of the vaccine, the vaccine adverse event reporting system is the government database, which was set up since 1986, once the vaccine companies exempted themselves from liability. So then that meant that every doctor had to present to you every reported injury that was through the federal system. So people can access that by just searching the vaccine adverse event reporting system, and then that will route you to a government database. OpenVeers.com, which is V-A-E-R's.com, is an interface that helps look at that. So you can look at categories, like you can look at the 70,000 permanently disabled people and the, you know, all the different injuries in the categories so that you could just assess. And that's what it was supposed to be used for. So you just decide, well, do I want to take this or not? Then when it comes to like any study that I mentioned, the ability to actually just use your search engine, because I mean, Google will heavily censor things, but even everything I've presented are all things that you can search and find on Google from the like medical databases like PubMed, whether it's inhaled budesonide, you could just put in inhaled budesonide, Oxford study. You could just literally search every particular thing that I've said and validate every claim that I've made. And then when it comes to like when someone says, well, there's nothing scientific about urine, this guy's an idiot, then you know, go and put in your search engine urine stem cells, Wake Forest University, and you'll find that there's an NIH grant, the National Institute of Health, that gave a grant to the Wake Forest University. They decided to use that to study urine-derived stem cells. Everyone knows how, you guys know that that's really expensive and that a lot of people do that if they're like ultra white and wealthy and cool and have all the tools at their disposal, and they do all these biohacking things, but most people feel like they can't get these expensive therapies like most of the world. But Wake Forest, they found that over 100 million stem cells in a 3-week urine sample. They took a 24-hour urine sample, found 140 stem cells. They replicated this 10 times. And then if they let it sit, it would proliferate into 100 million stem cells if left to sit for 3 weeks, and it would keep subdividing. It makes sense that this happens because that's what babies are born in. You were a baby born in your own urine. You urinated from 8 weeks old onwards, and it was urine, which we referred to as amniotic fluid, that went in through your nose and mouth and formed your lungs at between 8 and 10 weeks. If that didn't happen, if babies don't produce urine, they die at that point. They can't form lungs.
The urine is filled with stem cells.
I didn't know that.
A massive cover-up.
So for someone that's never heard of stem cells before, Jonathan, are you able to just explain real quick what a stem cell is?
A stem cell is a cell that has not turned into anything yet, but it has all the ability to form into basically anything. And so what that means is that you have no knee cartilage and you're needing a knee transplant. Imagine if you're 40 and then you get a knee transplant, and then you're like got 10 or 15 years, and then you're in a wheelchair from then onwards after that 15 years. or you get stem cells injected straight into there, even if you had zero knee cartilage, because the genetic information of what is supposed to be there is in your body, when a stem cell attaches, it will form into whatever the stimulus is instructing it to be. So if you're missing anything in any part of your body, you could inject a stem cell straight into that and it would reform that tissue, including the fact that if you look up on YouTube and just put in heart, lung, you know, grown on a scaffold outside of a human body, you can watch that happen by simply stem cells being attached to a stimulus and they will form into that. It's the face, it's exactly what medicine should have been in terms of what you can regenerate everything. Stem cells are a holy grail.
Wow. And so urine has a lot of these stem cells. So when it comes to like drinking urine or putting it on your face for cosmetic reasons, is it literally like just getting the urine and doing that, or there must be a process or filtration,
like a process of filtration, what, like the kidneys, right?
Yeah. Like, okay, so he's just pulled out a glass of urine. That's your own urine?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's
great. Cheers.
It's not okay, apple he's drinking. Juice?
He's literally taking a sip of urine right now.
Jonathan, what does it taste? What does it taste like, Jonathan?
Okay, so I will like literally sit here like I'm on MasterChef or whatever. I don't know what those shows are called, but yeah, let's imagine that I'm on one of those shows and I'm tasting somebody's cooking and I'm about to critique it. All right, let me
let's
just
go
do it from scratch. Okay, let me think. Okay, smelling. Okay, interesting. Like water and coconut juice because I drank coconut juice. Okay.
Okay, another gulp.
And a little bit of salt, coconut juice, and a little bit of green tea. That's exactly what it tastes like. It tastes good.
Jonathan, are you drinking it warm or is it refrigerated? Like how do you enjoy it?
I just did before the camera went on, and so it is still warm. So it's perfect like room temperature. There's easier ways to do it, and I'm not saying that anyone has to do this.
Wait, hold on.
Imagine if you got teleported into a society where like hand washing was not cool and it was like the craziest thing. Because like that guy that basically told people that they should wash their hands got put in a mental asylum. You know that?
Yeah.
So it was so weird what he was saying. Imagine if you got teleported into a society where they thought urine was a toxin. That's the society that we're in. We're the first ones that really think this. Look at all the documented societies and cultures that had way less diseases than what we did. Our mortality rates are worse than what you think. Even the 1800s had better. If you take out the 0 to 6 years old, that's when the children were dying of these diseases. But if you talk about longevity, we're not doing good as a society. Anyway, point being that if you, like urine is, it was understood as a metabolic distillation of your blood. It's actually just a filtration of your blood. It's the purity of your blood. It's not what you think it is. Kidneys don't filter toxins to dump them out of your body. If they did this, babies would die in the womb. Think about the fact that the Environmental Working Group showed that on average through the umbilical cord, you are getting 287 chemicals pumped through the umbilical cord to the baby. Babies are getting pumped with toxins and heavy metals and cancer-causing toxins. In fact, of those 287, 120, right around there, are proven to cause cancer. Now, if the baby then uses its kidneys to filter out its waste product and then dumps it into the urine, babies urinate every 1 to 3 hours and they drink hundreds of milliliters. Now, you're in Australia, you know what that milliliter is. So hundreds of milliliters per day, like basically it's around its body weight per day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cycling it every time. And if babies open their eyes in urine. So, you know, all these toxins that we're being told are there would go into the eyes. They would poison that baby. But now go into the pharmacy and look at all the products and realize that when you go and get eye drops, when it says murine, which is urine with the letter M in front of it, and you realize, oh, that's right. Well, they actually tried to resemble urine because it's actually made for your eyes. Urine is supposed to be put in your eyes when you need to, and it will calm your eye immediately. It's a substitute for using those toxic products that destroy your eyes. And then urea for the skin, which is basically the only clinically proven skin moisturizer in the world. You put it in your skin, it just absorbs straight in as if it was part of you, because it is. It's your blood filtered. And then you go, why'd they give a name like urea? Because it was modeled after urine. It's a synthetic version of urine. Then what about if you got a blood clot, then you get urokinase, which is the urine enzyme. And you look at hold on a second. This is all getting sold back to me for inflammation, Premarin, pregnant mare urine. Like, why am I taking a horse urine and, you know, paying money for this when I've got it myself?
Yeah.
Welcome to Big Pharma.
What? Well, to what a I business just, model, eh? What
I just had model, a visual of my husband because he puts eye drops in. Imagine me going up to him being like, not today.
Pissing his eye.
Yeah, it saves some money. You're all about saving money.
Is it safe to do other people's urine, or is it only meant to be your own?
Yeah, it's safe. There was this famous NFL player. You guys could look him up, but he would ask all these teammates to donate urine so he could bathe in the whole thing. And one of the interviewers said to him, "Do they have a problem with that? That sounds like weird. Do they have a problem?" And he said, and then he responded with something really funny where he said, "Hold on a second. You're telling me that My brothers, my friends are going to piss for the man," and he was talking about a drug test, "but they're not going to piss for a brother." And it was funny because it was, if that's something useful to you, yeah, you could have urine donors and you could use it for bathing and things like that. But if you, there was just certain societies where it was illegal to even keep your own infant's urine because it was understood of how potent and powerful it was. And so they would have servants to collect the diapers and then they would take them and bathe in the urine and wring them out and things like that. But in terms of the safety behind taking somebody else's, the reason why people would do their own is simply because you have a metabolic distillation of what your body needs.
Yeah.
Imagine your own body as its own compound pharmacy. And like, there are alleged toxins that show up in urine, but if you study that more carefully, it's a metabolic form of it, which means your body has processed it. It's actually filtered that toxin, like mercury as an example.
Yeah, so where do all the kidneys filter out the toxins? And the story is that it gets, well, the story that's claimed is that it gets put into the urine and then it's released.
All the bad stuff comes out of the urine.
But but you're saying it's actually the opposite of that.
Yeah.
That it's actually that it's actually like the...
We keep the good stuff. Well, it takes the bad stuff because the kidneys are filter. They filter the toxins.
Yeah.
And then what you get is like a good, all your purity or whatever.
But where does the toxins go then?
Yeah, where do the toxins
go? Well, why do we keep feces. The toxins?
Oh. What'd you say?
Well, yeah. Feces.
Yeah. Poop. Feces, it comes out through, you know, America poop or Australians poo. Yeah.
So we can mark poo off as do not consume.
Yeah, so that's stay away from the
stop
poo.
Doing it, yes. Not
except it sounds like you guys haven't heard of fecal microbial transplant.
No, I don't.
I've heard of, I think I've heard something like that.
Fecal microbial transplant is completely accepted as now mainstream.
So what is it? What is it? I don't know what that is.
It's taking the feces of a healthy individual and then encapsulating that and having that either swallowed or anal suppository to transfer the microbiome of the healthy person into.
We did. We spoke about this on the show last year.
Yeah. Transferring poo, pretty much.
You can actually make money from.
Was that because of my one, or was that somebody else's? Because I did one on Sean Kelly's podcast where I talked about that, and it was.
Well, I'm sure it was something.
This is about a year and a half ago. A year ago, we spoke about that.
That wasn't me. Then.
There was something going on here in Sydney, in Australia. They were asking for people to donate their poo, and they would pay for it.
Yeah, there was a shortage of donations, and they were saying if you're a healthy individual. Get your poo tested because it might make you $500 a week.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. I wanted to ask the question, Jonathan, how long have you been consuming urine?
2 years.
Okay, 2 years. Now,
every day?
Because I was going to say, is the whole family consuming urine?
Yeah,
is your wife having a nice little cup of urine with you in the morning? What's the go there?
Like in terms of my wife, like she, well, you know, she was like, oh, please don't tell me, you know, you've now... You were always extreme, Jonathan. Now you're talking about this, and it sounded terrible. She was thinking, please no. Now that's what you're going to be known for now. And I'm thinking, oh no, as well. But I'm thinking that I can't not say what is true.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was a huge struggle for me. It took me a while to kind of think this all through. So then she was like on the sideline, and then she finally decides she's going to try it, and then. One of the things that she noticed was she had this wart. She tried all the different treatments to try and get rid of a wart, and then she put it in urine. The next day it was gone, and then she realized, okay.
What?
Wait. So that's just like, say, wart on your finger. She just put it in her own urine, and the next day the wart disappeared.
Yeah. Give it like maybe, like it was like something like 36 hours. It was just right around that day mark, between a day and a day and a half, something like that. It was so quick. It blew her mind, and she would have thought that she had to soak it in there for a while, or, you know, if somebody's really trying to do it right, you could age your urine, you could make the urine fresh and put it like a Band-Aid and strap on that urine so it keeps soaking in. So I can't say that everyone can replicate what she did, but I had something like that happen where I had this massive shingles. Like, I got shorts on right now, so like I had this terrible shingles here in this leg here. Look, I look like I'm wearing nothing. I guess that's shorts. And like, there's no scarring here as well, which is amazing. But it was there for like a year and a half. It was terrible. I hated it, and it was painful, and it was so thick. And so, you know, I could screen share or whatever. It's true. And I injected urine into it,
like with a needle.
Yeah, I took a peptide needle. Like, if you know that people injecting themselves with testosterone,
Right.
Took that like really thin needle that really doesn't hurt that much, and then I just put it in at an angle, and I put it, like, nobody told me to do this, but I saw somebody do it to me with a homeopathic remedy in Colombia. And then I told the doctor that was doing it, I said, I could do this with you. And she said, don't do that. I'm like, well, I understand that that would work. And it came, after she did it with the homeopathic, she said, it'll work and it'll take it away. And it did, but then it came back.
Okay.
And so then I injected it with the urine, and I just did it right in the surface and made these little bubbles of the urine. I put about 7 points, and then immediately the pain went, and it didn't, I felt like it wasn't even there. The next day it was on its way out. By 4 days in, it was like, you could see that like a faint mark. By a week, it was as if it never happened.
I want to try something now. Maybe I can get your opinion on this, Jonathan, because I want to see if this works or if there's any benefit of me putting urine on this. I've got a little fungus spot on the back of my neck.
Oh, yeah, I have that too.
I've got a bit of, and obviously I can go to the chemist and I can buy the I don't know what the cream is called or whatever. Do you think if I was to put a bit of my own urine on the back of my neck, do you think that would help at all?
I do. I think that it will work, firstly, and it'll be interesting because then you'll be able to kind of report whether it does or not. So now the couple of things that you could do, you just apply it. You could just apply it daily or whatever. And just in terms of everyone's wondering, oh, no, it's going to smell. He's going to be the guy that smells like urine. One of the things that happens with me, because I talk about that, and then like if you guys were with me, then I'd say, look, everyone, just go ahead and smell me. Smell my face. And then you wouldn't be able to smell anything. The reason is because urine absorbs. And so like if you just put it on there and then 10 minutes later you chose because you really didn't want anyone to think, or you didn't want to think about it and you wanted to wash it off, you could, because there'd be nothing there. It would have already absorbed.
Right.
And now what you're doing is you're hydrating your skin, you're putting water back in there, and you're giving yourself all these signaling molecules. So your urine knows that what you've got. And like there's 5,600 compounds and metabolites that have been found in urine. So all the information, basically like urine, think about it like a 3D print of everything that's going on in your body.
Yeah.
And when you put it back in, your body knows that you've got that issue there. And this is amazing. Water holds memory. So your water in your body actually is holding a memory of everything that's going on in your body. And that's completely easy to document and prove. You've got people like Dr. Masuro Emoto, New York Times bestseller. It shows that when you speak actually over water, it forms crystals. And so it just shows you that it responds.
Mm.
And in this case, when it's inside your body, it's taking like a survey of everything that's going on in your body. And then it's giving you back this information. It's part of the reason why if urine was a waste product, then why would it dump out every single hormone you have, every single neurotransmitter, including serotonin, dopamine, epinephrine, norepinephrine? Why would it dump all these out? DMT, it's got DMT in urine. Then you've got anti-cancer neoplastons. And you've got all these different compounds. Why would it dump out all these helpful things? So when you apply it, it'll work. And the other thing that you could do is age urine. Now, this is what age urine looks like. But it keeps going darker. So you look at the difference, like it's murky as well, like, which is really interesting. Like it, so these are, and urine has been measured for its ability to conduct electricity. Like 1 liter of urine, which is about a quarter gallon, will contains about 8.5 kilowatts of energy, which can power a house for 8 hours. So a lot of, there's machines actually that are out there.
This seems like a holy grail of humanity, right? In terms of health,
But I don't get why our body would get rid of it. I just don't understand.
Well, here's the thing. This is what I'm comprehending.
What about semen? Doesn't your body get rid of semen, boys, girls?
Yeah, yeah.
But isn't that the purpose of, like, making children? Like, so that's why that happens?
I'm confused. Let me answer this. Let me answer this, Jonathan, because this is what I'm getting from what you're saying about urine. I feel like as human beings, we've completely falsified what urine actually is. Urine is our body creating our own medicine for ourselves. That's exactly what it is, right. And we're just discarding it when we're not meant to. We're actually, right. As humans, right. I think we're meant to be using our urine for everything it possibly can do for us.
Yeah. Is there any proof or any history?
Yeah, what that cultures were that, like? Yeah,
like, well, yeah, were our ancestors doing this? Like, was there any point in time where humanity was using urine as a beneficial medicine.
Everything from European, like, so in Europe, you saw with the bubonic plague, the Jews were doing it to prevent themselves from the bubonic plague. They were so protected from the bubonic plague that they were blamed for creating it. Poisoning the wells. That was what one of the Jewish leaders was captured, tortured, forced to confess that he poisoned the wells. And that's why they weren't affected, but everyone else was. And the two things they were doing that were different, one was the sanitation. They were using the book of Leviticus to use the sanitation practices, which arguably may have been the largest factor. But the second factor was they were using urine. They were drinking their own urine. Because when you get poisoned or you get infected with these types of things, you do it and it immediately cancels the issue. And that includes things like if you were having respiratory arrest because you ate shellfish or something like that, or some kind of allergic reaction and you were stopping breathing. Like the videos that you guys saw of me on Sean Kelly's show, where I was talking about putting on my face, then you'll see people laughing and going like, this guy's an idiot. He's just so dumb. And then you'll see other people say, yeah, I've seen people nearly die before. They don't even know anything about the science. They've seen the ambulance wouldn't got there in time. They were having an allergic reaction that meant they couldn't breathe. They went and drank their urine and they cleared it immediately. And just 2 days ago, somebody was like, I overheard what you're saying. That happened to me when I was 20. I had shellfish reaction. And then my airways were seizing up. I drank it. So I just wanted to pass that thing because these different historical events and people were using it in acute situations. Egyptian, they had a strong record and history of it. Indian, Chinese, then you've got your Japanese, Taiwanese, they all have these large histories of it. Australian Aboriginals had a large history of it. Native Americans in Puerto Rico, Tainos, they had a strong history of it. And so Greeks, Romans, the Roman economy had a urine taxation system because a lot of their economy under some of the emperors was based on the transaction of urine. You look at the phosphorus that's in urine. The issue with food production is that we've run out of phosphorus stones generally. Like we're having a massive depletion. So the future of food is under threat. But phosphorus is in massive quantities in urine. And if people were using their urine as a fertilizer, we'd actually save the food crisis. And that's 100% true.
Oh my God, that makes so much sense. Cause I'm trying to get, like, my uncle's growing a lemon tree for me to put in my backyard.
Right.
And he said, piss, like dig up the whole thing out and then just wee on it as many times as you can. Just keep on weeing on the hole. And then when the tree's there, you just keep on weeing on the tree. And then
exactly.
The tree will just become magnificent.
I wonder if the lemons taste
good. It will. And one other thing that you can do is have a glass jar somewhere there or any kind of bottle or jar. Let age it first and then dump it on after like a month or two or at least a couple of weeks. And then it's kind of a waste when you think about it. But I mean, our plants are pretty important to us. But you're basically dumping all these like hundreds of millions of stem cells onto your plants, but
But you're also dumping it in a toilet like every four or five times a day. So we're literally getting rid of. Okay. This is
mind boggling. Can I actually question? This is a personal question for myself. Can I put urine on my hair and regrow my hair, Jonathan? I'm going through a bit of a balding crisis at the moment.
Yes, you can.
Wow.
Yes, you got to do
I'm
it.
I'm doing it.
We're going to do it.
I'm going to do
you
it.
Have to do it.
How does it work, Jonathan? Do you know how hair can regrow from urine? John. How does it work?
Yeah, well, like, I've got one of my close friends, he's like changing, like one of my best friends. It took me 2 years to convince him to do it. And I don't actually try to convince people to do it, but everyone asks me and people are curious. And he ended up doing a 7-day urine fast. I've done that as well, where I've done nothing but drink urine for
in this
6 days I did.
Wow.
But okay. Avanisha, the difference is as well, when you don't drink, if you don't eat any food, what's happening is your urine becomes more and more pure. It becomes just like, you cannot tell the difference between urine and water.
Wow.
You would, like, I've had that lots of times. I'm like, one of these cups had urine, one of them had water, which one was which? And I can't work it out. So it's, this is like such a lie. Like, so just remember, everything we're dealing with right now is just brainwashing and, like, I won't say mind control, but like, it's basically a brainwashing that happened since we were children, where even if a tiny bit of urine got on your fingers, you would think that you'd just been like stung by a zombie or something. And then this repeated of the icky gross factor was embedded in you. And if I did the same thing with anything else, you would think it was gross and disgusting, even if it was something amazing. You could even do that with attraction. You could basically convince somebody that somebody like that was actually very attractive was like very disgusting. And you could convince this if you kept repeating it. It's happened through history.
Is there such thing as too much urine? Like, can you consume an unlimited amount without it affecting your body? Or is it like having like 5 apples a day, you're going to get diabetes?
No, I don't believe so. And the reason is because of this kind of answers the question that Avanisha asked before about the fact that why does the body dump it out? And the answer is because the body can't utilize it in that moment in time. And it has to regulate blood pressure. So there is mechanisms that mean that you have to go. It's not an option. You will go if you're just like you pee in your pants because you can't hold it any longer. Your body has to regulate its blood pressure. And then in terms of the fact of why it's dumping out what we categorize as minerals, they're actually more like signaling molecules. They're information sources. Like, if you've ever heard of somebody changing their life using peptides, anyone familiar with that? They're injecting themselves with peptides and all of a sudden they've got like this incredible health. And it's because peptides are just these amino acids that it's information. It's not like getting vitamin C where there's actually like a plant in there. It's just information. Urine is basically just a total information source. And then it's balancing different information, which is also one of the cool reasons if you're peeing on plants, you're giving them information of what you're also deficient in, which is super interesting. Does the plant now give you what you're deficient in? I'm saying there is an interrelationship between plants and humans that people are completely overlooking. It's way deeper than what you think. So you're signaling your body. How much water can you drink? There is a certain amount of water that if you drank a certain amount, it would become difficult to process. And the same thing is true for water. Just think of urine like water. And then you kind of get a strong litmus for that. It's just like the issue, there is a conspiracy to me when it comes to the fact that we're told not to drink distilled water, which is weird because rainwater is distilled and urine is distilled. And it was totally fine for the babies for 8 months of their life to drink their urine continually. And now we shouldn't drink distilled water because it will leach your calcium and minerals from our bones. But the issue with spring water is that it has inorganic minerals that you can't actually convert. And you'll find these studies where people live next to springs and they drank the water there all the time. That's all they drank. And their organs were calcified because these minerals like will build up around the organs. And so I'm saying that we should actually be drinking something like distilled, which is like reverse osmosis, which filters out all the impurities as well. So you could do reverse osmosis and things like this. And you're getting something that's not so heavy on the body anyway. And urine is arguably just, you know, a much more mineral dense source. But if somebody wants to do it in the most easy way, it's easy to remember to drink your first morning urine. It's the most dense in stem cells because when you're sleeping, you're generating stem cells. When you're fasting, you're generating stem cells. And surprisingly, even though it's a darker color in the morning, it often tastes pretty bland and like nothing much because you haven't eaten. If you drink your urine, you're like, that tasted disgusting. It's not the urine that tasted disgusting. It's the food that you just ate that tastes disgusting. Wow. Too much cooked food and we're not eating enough raw food. And I'm not talking about sushi. I'm talking about raw plants.
Okay, so all right, so wow, there's a lot of information that you've just dropped on us. Very interesting information.
And Yaz wants to know how to regrow his hair as well.
Yaz, will you commit to giving it a try?
I honestly can't believe Jonathan's convincing me to consume my own piss right now.
I actually feel like going now.
I'm really considering it, and I might give it a go behind closed doors without telling anyone, because I think my family will look at me a bit weird. They won't understand what's going on. But Yeah, Jonathan, you are convincing me, and I'll definitely rub some urine on my hair. Is that how it works?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So now if you're going to do that on your hair, like, so this is like aged urine, and it's a musky smell. It smells strong, but if you put it on your skin, you'll find that it's a musky smell, and you've got to just kind of think about it. And if you put some cologne on, sometimes you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. It's stronger though. If you smell it, you'd be like, that's disgusting. But then you'll work out, hold on, is it? Because it actually has this kind of rustic kind of musky. It's interesting. Like, so one, you put that on your skin at night, and you'll feel your skin in the morning, Avanish. You won't be able to stop touching your skin, because it ends up feeling so moisturized, and it feels like weirdly soft. So people do that. And then in terms of you could do the aged urine, because that's where you got the stem cells. You'd be putting stem cells direct in on your head, because the ways that people actually consume stem cells, you look at the fact that I've got a baby still breastfeeding. Well, he's nearly three, but he's still breastfeeding. And there's stem cells in breast milk. That's 100% provable. Why would they be there if you can't digest them? So I'm saying that when you have them in your urine, you're actually digesting stem cells. They're going through. They must have some kind of encapsulation. I'm working, actually I'm funding some studies myself around this. But now with the aged urine, you could put it on your head. You could actually, you know, some people that really want to try this will like soak aged urine in a rag. So I'm going to actually show you what it like looks like to drink aged urine. It's strong. It's not that bad. And if you don't want to taste the smell, you can.
Oh my God.
You can't really taste something if you block your nose. People can do this rectally as well via enema, which you guys are kind of probably like, oh, enema. Now it's even more intense, but enemas are really basic. Anyway, so there's another methodology there. But now in terms of your hair, you could put a rag on and have aged urine and let it soak there so it keeps going transdermally, like for half an hour while you're sitting there working, just kind of do the experiment. Yeah. The other thing you could do is grab some red lights for a few $100 and then put it on your head, grab the red light helmet. And because once you now put the stem cells there, you can, red lights actually stimulate the body to produce stem cells and concentrate in that area as well. So you could put that on. And look, bro, if you work that out, people, that'll go so viral. And that'll be great.
If my hair actually grows back, that will go insane.
We got to track it.
We have to. Jonathan, there isn't long left, but I've noticed every time you take a sip of the pee, you're only sipping it. Can you actually skull it?
Don't make him skull it.
Oh,
skull
yes.
It.
I 100% can. Which one? I'll do the fresh one.
Do the fresh one.
Okay. He's sending it. Yeah.
Trying to make sure I don't like spill it on my clothes. That like look like too enthusiastic here.
Urine a day keeps the doctor away.
Wow, that's just,
well done. Good on you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan, for joining us.
People can find you across all socials. Just search Jonathan Otto. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely, Jonathan Otto. And the Instagram is like at the moment it's Jono JONNO.OTTO. But the other one is urinetherapy.com. Like that's where we've got tons of free resources.
Yeah.
And Yaz, that's where I'm saying that with you, if you read up on it, like you will get shot down once somebody in your family works this out.
Yep.
But if you've got the science, then what will happen is, and if you read some of the materials on this, urine is the most studied substance in modern medicine. It is. That's the reason why it's through all the medications.
Wow.
There are studies on how urine has been used medically through Japan, in Europe, in America. All the medical literature is so robust. We didn't even go into it today. I just kind of mentioned the stem cells. But there is so much study on urine. There is no single substance that has been studied more medically in the last 100 years than urine. And then when you cite the studies on polio, cite the studies on tuberculosis and how it saved lives, and on cancer especially, on multiple thousands of people done by medical doctors and committees and published in medical journals. If you look at this and you cite it, wow, this is something. And like what happens is even if people are laughing at you, you just taught them something that could save their life.
Of course.
Because the thing that's interesting about cancer is the antigens to cancer are in your urine. And what happens when you reintroduce an antigen, it causes an antibody to be attached and produced and attached to that antigen. Now your body can recognize self from non-self, and it knows what the cancer is and that it's not part of your body. And this is how it's been used historically. And that's why urine therapy was the number one remedy for cancer. And there were even German kings that used it in the 14th century for all their cancer patients. And they were using it so effectively. It got buried, but anyway, you kind of end up enlightening a lot of people that could save their life. And so to me, it's worth taking the bullet on something that could save the people that are laughing at me.
Yeah, of course.
Mate, I love that. And we're going to have to end it. We're going to have to end it here, Jonathan. But wow, what an amazing, amazing episode. And just mind blowing. We're going to have to get you back at some
point.
Definitely.
Again. Absolutely.
We'd love for you to,
yeah. And just break down a lot more of what you're discussing and when you know releasing certain docuseries. But mate, Jonathan Otto, investigative journalist there. Thank you so much for joining us here on Already Cancelled. wow, just amazing. Thanks, and are you coming back to Australia soon?
Yes, absolutely. I love Australia. I'll be back soon.
Okay.
While I remember as well, Cancer Secrets, cancerseries.com. People can watch a free nine-part series on cancer, including urine therapy and other treatments for cancer. Anyway, that's cancerseries.com in case people want. And it's free.
Thank you're a good so man, much Jonathan.
For joining us, mate. Have a great day. We'll see you soon. Yes. Wow. Okay, so that was just.
Avanisha's ready to go home and try her own piss.
All right. Honestly, who is convinced?
I'm gonna do my own research.
Yeah, I need to look up some stuff. But to be fair, he was really well spoken. Anything he mentioned, he always talked about where he found the study from, and he's based his whole life being an investigative journalist, so you got to give credit where it's due. But of course, everyone should always do their own research. Go to the websites he mentioned and take a look. I'm not
I'm sure his websites are going to be exactly what he said. Well, so if you want to do your research, maybe
other sources. He says he has just general websites like PubMed and things like that. Whereas there's so many resources and medical.
I didn't think that chat was going to go for this long, but it was definitely worth it. There's a lot of things that I learned today. I didn't know babies consume their own urine on a regular basis for 8 months. I did not know that.
Open their eyes. It's good for your eyes.
And if babies can do it, then I'm sure we can.
Well, we all did.
We know that if Yaz has new lock of hair.
I know Yaz is going to come in like
we know what's happened.
Prince, what is it like? Prince, I don't know. What's that prince that's long, beautiful, luscious hair?
Oh, I don't know.
Who?
I don't know.
I was thinking of
someone with luscious
Rapunzel?
Hair.
No, not Rapunzel.
I was thinking of Shrek. You know Prince Farquaad?
No, not Lord. That's Lord. Have a cough? That's Lord Farquaad. Yeah, Lord Farquaad. It's like he's got a full bob too.
Yeah, it's like
he's got nice hair. He's got nice hair.
Okay, all right, so.
I am not going near my piss.
But see, can I ask why? After everything he's just told us.
Well, that's fine. I will do some research. I will look into it. Still can't confirm that I would.
Would you try your own urine? Just give it a
no, I don't think so.
Why? Just because society told you not to?
Hold on. Just because one person's told me to do it, I'm not going to believe it.
But if you do your own research and he's got merit to what he's saying, you're not going to give it a little sippy sippy?
Well,
it just makes you think, like...
The guy's almost 40 years old. He looks 25.
He looked very young. I was quite taken aback by
that. He's almost 40, guys.
Hey, but hold on. He's got like... What did he say he was?
Half Malaysian, half German.
Yeah, so the Asian genes, I'm telling you, they're amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, we'll leave it at that. Whatever you choose to do is yours. Do your research. Do whatever you got to do. But that's up to your prerogative, what you want to do from here on out. And we'll report back whatever we choose to do with our own prerogative.
I might give it a go.
I'm definitely going to give it a go.
He's going to have a piss rag on his head.
That was annoying.
I reckon you just get a spray bottle and just spray it on.
I thought that would be easy, like just to give it a quick rub and then 20 minutes later have a shower.
Yeah.
But he's like, when you go to work, so when I'm here on the podcast.
at home.
When I'm here on the podcast on Friday, guys, I'm just going to have this wet yellow towel on my head.
Well, what I wanted to ask is like, you know how because his piss looked very like it was yellow. It was like a yellow, light faint yellow.
Yeah.
Like, is it better to have it? Like, what level of
the mid,
what
the color? The mid color.
Yeah. Okay.
I'd assume.
Yeah, because if you're eating, let's say, Hungry Jack's or something,
then it's gonna go darker. It's gonna go and stuff.
But if you've had like vitamins, for instance, like I eat vitamins before going to bed at night, and if I don't drink enough water after eating those vitamins, the next morning,
gosh. Yeah, I think it's B. Vitamin B.
Yeah, something.
Like, it makes it like a Gatorade.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It smells weird, isn't it?
God, we just watched a man drink his own pee. Guys.
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right. Good on him. He sculled it.
Like, share, and subscribe. This is Already Cancelled. Thank you so much for joining us today, guys. Good luck.
Take care.
Bye.
Already Cancelled. you like the podcast, prove it. Like, share, and subscribe, and don't forget to leave us a cheeky review.